Ahead and get underway then. This is the Hyperledger Technical Steering Committee call. Everybody is welcome to attend this call so long as you abide by the antitrust policy and take care to be respectful to the other contributors. And you can find out more about that at our code of conduct, which is linked on the agenda and a number of other places. Salona, would you like to take folks through the announcements?
Sure. So again, ongoing, the CICD committee with Dave Hughesby. If you want to join, please ping him about joining. They're having regular meetings and it looks like making a fair amount of progress. We're also upgrading our certs, especially, and so we're looking for volunteers for helping with the upgrade. I think we're good with the Fabric one, because we're looking at upgrading Fabric to the 1.41 RAFT protocol. But we would like to get Sawtooth updated. I just had a really good phone call with Amal this morning at 7 a.m. Central Time. And he's going to also be recruiting some people for us to help with that. So if you know anyone, please let us know. Also, Dave has posted the rough draft of the readiness report. I would like to encourage everyone to go ahead and read and comment, because it'll be on the agenda for next week, not this week. We've got a pretty full thing for this week. So let us know. Yes.
Oh, I wanted to jump in here and comment on this. I wanted to come clean that I've been struggling with writing this. If you go to that document, you'll notice that I have like three separate tracks, or, you know, where I've attempted to it. So if you scroll down, so that's attempt number. That's attempt number three. But if you scroll down, there's take two, which was my previous attempt. And then there, if you keep scrolling down, there's take one, which was my previous attempt. So the reason I've tried three times at this document is because I have a lot to say about product readiness. And project readiness, and a lot of ideas about how we can measure this and how we can formalize it. But every time I start writing this, I realize I'm repeating a lot of what's already in the wiki about project lifecycle and exit criteria and all that kind of stuff. So my most recent try, which is at the top, I just focused on the things that we probably should do next, which is, primarily, we need to formalize the exit criteria from each of the stages, and including like the first major release. And Salona had a really good idea of developing basically like a questionnaire form, like the way the CII badge is done, and focusing on that. So if we formalize sort of like the criteria, so that teams, so it becomes like a self-service thing on the wiki. Teams can go through and fill out all their comments, you know, as a proposal of like, hey, you know, we're good on this level, moving on. But the thing I want to ask the TSC is, you know, having a little more direction on exactly what you want out of this would help me take all those three previous tries and pare it down into something that is truly useful for all of us.
Okay, so that's important context. So TSC members, please do take a directional look at that and make sure that some or all of that is what was being asked for. If there's any reference that you can give to the original question that spawned that, feel free to send that to the list, Dave.
Well, that was the thing. It was just, hey, we need to take a look at project readiness and develop, you know, what does it mean to be ready? What are we already doing? What should we be doing? And so that includes a lot of things, like how do we measure, and what, you know, okay, we measured things. What are good numbers? You know, what if we have a bunch of numbers, what would constitute good numbers? And then, you know, definitions of all the project readiness stuff. So like take two, I started writing like an essay on this, you know, or like an encyclopedia post. And then I realized I was repeating a lot of the stuff that's already on the wiki when I started trying to pull in all the other pages. And so it was like, well, this is dumb. I'm repeating myself. So anyway, the original question was, what does it look like to be for a project to be ready? And, you know, it was very vague. So yeah, if anybody has any ideas on exactly what we want out of this, I'm all ears. The third try, I think, is closest to what we want, which is some light definitions, but then, you know, here's what we are doing and here's what we need to be doing. And yeah, yep. And feel free to edit and put notes in there and comments and just dump anything in there. But it's important that we get this right, but, you know, we have a lot of stuff on the wiki already around Project Readiness. It's just not necessarily called out directly with a head nod to, you know, if you follow the stuff that's in this document, okay, that'll help make the project ready. Yeah.
The projects themselves asked for this, and some of the incoming projects have asked for this, and that they don't always understand what the rules of the game are, and they want to understand that better. And especially when they're trying to get ready, we notice that a bunch of them are like, well, we don't exactly understand how to get ready. And so I'm like, well, there's this to read. And they're just like, okay, we think we've got it, but, oh, we've missed this, or, oh, this is not right, and things of that nature. And so I'm like, okay, let's clarify it with some checklists and, you know, possibly a form. And let's also, you know, make sure that we're not missing anything. Because I do feel like having it scattered like that means that we do miss things. So that's why I asked for this proposal, is because I actually had many different projects and even labs that want to get promoted to becoming projects. They care about this because, you know, in the end, everyone wants to become an active release. And so they want to have more clarity on what that is and what the end goal is going to be.
Yeah. And that's why try number three is basically like, we should make questionnaires for each of these things, and then the TSE can decide what goes on those questionnaires.
Because in the end, we vote on it, right? In the end, the TSC votes on it and decides whether or not it goes through. But right now, there's not enough clarity for incoming projects and different ones as to, they're like, well, what does the TSC vote on? You know? And it's like, well, there's these things. And they're like, well, but that doesn't really tell me. So, I would like to have that more clear for people to understand.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it'd be good to have it clear for the TSC, too. Just saying.
Okay.
Yep. I'll start a thread on the TSC mailing list and we can talk more about it there.
Perfect. All right. So moving along in our rather packed agenda here, we've got a couple of project proposals. The first one has been circulated on the mailing list a week or so ago. So I hope everybody's had an opportunity to read through that. I'm going to hand it over to Sean Amundson to give an overview, and then we can have a bit of a discussion on that.
Sure. So I'll keep the overview brief. I'm not going to read the project proposal, but I'll just kind of describe at a high level what Transact, kind of the role that it plays. So it's a library that is intended to make the execution of smart contracts easier and pluggable. And so essentially what that means is taking a list of transactions and ending up with a list of resulting transaction receipts, which are the state changes. And then being able to use those state changes to modify state. So that sounds simple, but there's quite a lot involved. In Transact, you create a scheduler. The scheduler is essentially an ordered list of transactions, where the scheduler determines what the actual execution order is. There's two types, serial, and that's execute one at a time, essentially, and then parallel scheduler, where it uses hints about places in state that will be read and written to do out of order execution, but it guarantees the same results as a serial scheduler. There's an executor component, which reads those transactions from the schedule as it is able to execute them. So it's a very iterative process, like the transactions flow through. So the scheduler doesn't create a schedule up front, it's iterative. And the executor basically marshals it to smart contract engines. So a couple examples of smart contract engines that exist currently are Ceph, which is a smart contract engine and Sawtooth. Within Sawtooth currently it's called transaction processor, but within Transact it's a different terminology. But essentially that one executes EVM smart contracts using Burrow. And then another example is Sabre, and that executes WebAssembly code. And we can, you know, envision quite a lot of different smart contract engines over time. You know, one for DAML, for example, but you know, the list is kind of endless as to what those could be. And that's intentional because we're kind of taking the position that we don't know what you know, the perfect VM or interpreter is to use, and so they're pluggable. The executor also services in any interaction with state using context manager component. And essentially how that works is that the transactions are isolated in that there's a specific state that the transaction is run against. And the context manager helps with that isolation, essentially. Yeah, and then the results flow backward from that all the way back through the scheduler to the calling code in the form of receipts. Receipts can have a few things. It can have the list of state changes, obviously, because that's kind of the overall goal. But it can also have generated events that are contained in the receipt. And so that can be used to generate events for clients, for example. And then there's a couple other fields to support, like attaching arbitrary like data and stuff like that. To send back to clients. And then the calling code would take those receipts and apply them against state. So the calling code is kind of in charge of maintaining the interaction with state. So that's kind of the maybe quick technical overview. You know, as a library project, just a few more points and then we can get into questions. And so, yeah, as a library project, the goal here is to create a reusable component. So it's really, really heavily inspired by the code that we have in Sawtooth today. But the reason that we envision this as a library project is, you know, to kind of make it easier for other projects to consume it. We know two projects that for sure will consume it, Grid and Sawtooth. And we hope Fabric and other projects will use the library as well. So that's kind of the motivation behind creating it as a library and a distinct component.
Okay, thanks, Sean. And I think like to give Gary a chance to sort of wrap that up, and then we can move into feedback from TSC. TSC members. Looks like Brian will probably want to get in before the other TSC members, but Gary is not in the room with me, but he's one of the other sponsors on this project, so I wanted to give him an opportunity to say a couple words before we move into that.
You know, starting to have some common, I guess I'm unmuted now, right? might want to get ready to mute me again now. Of having a common component. And I think, you know, we've looked, you know, in Fabric at various things, you know, different transaction processing models. You know, we're very interested in things like WASM and other smart contract models. And we plugged in the Burrow as well. So this looks, you know, very intriguing, right? In terms of, you know, devil's in the details, but I think we can definitely, you know, look to see a path forward on how we could do this, and it makes sense to try to get involved up front on this. So I think this is if we can pull this off, this will be a great accomplishment.
Okay, great. Thanks, Gary. Brian?
And these aren't important points, but we have started to talk amongst the staff about maybe reformatting the categorization between frameworks and tools into maybe kind of a slightly richer categorization. So the suggestion that this is more of a library, you know, kind of in the same way that Grid is kind of templates and libraries, you know, is very much welcome. And we won't try to shoehorn this into, you know, the existing thing. I think, you know, what we maybe want to do in a future TSC call is talk about maybe, you know, what is, if we were to make it four categories rather than two of projects in Hyperledger, what would it be? So just bookmark that. And then secondly, if we could find a different name, I think there are quite a few people who'd be happier about that. Earlier, as we've, you know, found in the past, is better to try to sort this out. I don't know how wedded attached people are to the name, or if they're open to an open process for picking a new one. Of course, these are completely insubstantial when it comes to the technical details of the proposal, but just wanted to highlight them now.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Before we get into maybe some of those details about how we name it and put it into the broader nomenclature, are there clarifying questions from members of the Technical Steering Committee?
This is Nathan. I have a question. First, I'd like to echo Gary's sentiment that this project seems really interesting to us in the Indie project. We currently don't have a sandbox for transaction or smart contract execution. And as the proposal mentions, there's some interesting possibilities for including secure computing functionality through an interface like this in Indie's agent layer. And then my question was, in terms of support in a cross-project way, do you have any developers or contributors who are engaged in the requirements gathering process or supporting the project beyond Sawtooth?
The expectation is to work with Gary on the Fabric stuff and his team to make sure that, for example, the transaction receipts that we end up with can be translated into read-write sets, and that it just generally makes sense in terms of Fabric's architecture.
Yeah, and this is Jonathan Levi. I will probably join it as well as a sponsor. Time to meeting. Yeah. So more support from the Fabric side.
That's great. I wanted to make sure that we did have well-rounded support from that entire part of the community. Mr. Wagner has his hand up.
Hey, thanks, Dan. So I guess what's not clear to me, and it seems to have pretty broad support, is how much of this is code that's being lifted out of something, and how much of this is starting from scratch. You know, Sean made the comment it was heavily inspired from Sawtooth. I'm just trying to understand where are things at? Are we trying to take something out of A and put it into B? Or, you know, is it already there?
Yeah, it's a little blurry. Not blurry, but it's the design is substantially the same as what's in Sawtooth currently, but what we have in Sawtooth is Python, and Sawtooth itself is moving to Rust. So what we've done is kind of taken the opportunity, knowing that we were going to present this, start a re-implementation in Rust. And so that's listed, the URL is in the fact section, I think the last part of the proposal. And so that code does not contain all of the features. For example, there's not yet a parallel scheduler, but it is able to run Sawtooth transactions now with some work. The APIs are slightly different. We're trying to use the opportunity to make it friendlier for other frameworks. And so the APIs are not precisely the same. And so we're focusing in that Rust library on backwards compatibility. But as we go through it, the design is really translating what's in Sawtooth now and then updating it with the ideas kind of driven by being a more reusable library component.
Okay, thank you.
All right, looks like the eminent Dr. Bowman would like to speak.
Oh boy. We've talked a lot in the past about sort of cross-platform projects, and I love architecture and Transact and the approach that you propose, Sean. I think, as you know, I think it's great work. As a high-level project, and one of the real values in this to Hyperledger as a community is again the sort of cross-platform availability. That doesn't happen by accident. As we've seen in the past with projects we've sort of encouraged to be cross-project that have not quite gone down that direction. So I really have two questions. A high-level one, which I think is the same as what Mark was asking and others, is what will be done to encourage participation from other groups actively? And the second question, which is related, is really Transact itself looks great. How much work do you expect for a platform to be able to adopt it, and who will own the pieces of this that's required to do the integration to Fabric or Indy or Sawtooth's done, but so who does that work and how hard is it?
Yeah, so to the first one, like how to foster like participation. We've learned a lot with Sawtooth and Grid on how to essentially get more community participation. And so I would expect kind of continuing with some of the things that we're doing there. Primary one is writing up RFCs for changes in the framework, and then soliciting feedback in kind of a very, very structured way. And so that gives an opportunity that otherwise might not exist for people to read what the planned change is and then comment. So for example, one of the things that Transact doesn't have support for now that we're about to write an RFC for is multiple database support, right? And so like that'll be put out as an RFC, and everyone can comment, and then we can iterate on the RFC as a way to have kind of design artifacts used as discussion points. And that's been working really well in Sawtooth. It's really driven better behavior for the core developers to have to document their ideas.
Okay.
And then to the second point, A second question about who owns integrations. That would be the projects themselves, because this is a library project. It would not know about Grid or Sawtooth or Fabric. It's really providing a capability, kind of in the same way that Ursa is providing a capability. So the maintainers of Transact might not know the internal workings of all the other projects, right? So it would be kind of hard for them to maintain it. But the general idea of it being a library is it's making a certain set of functionality easier. And so the expectation that I have is, because it makes it easier, that's the that's part of the motivation for using the library. So within Sawtooth, right, we'll have less code to do this, right? And so so there will be motivation to maintain the library on from the Sawtooth community. Like Nathan alluded to, like they don't currently have this capability within indie agents, but hopefully this library will kind of provide like an easy way to get there without writing a ton of code to do it, where it's like literally create a scheduler and add some transactions and get the results back. That's like, you know, like the API should be like really easy to consume. And I think the difficult part for projects is figuring out not how to use the library, but where it fits within their architecture, since the architectures are all very, very different. But I think that's part of keeping the design philosophy of it's a library, and we don't know every single way that it can be used. We just know that that what it's used for is running transactions and getting the results back. And keeping it pure in that sense.
Okay, great. Hart?
Sure. Thanks for presenting, Sean. I had a question. Do you guys have any API documentation?
It's not up. It's like in the Transact repo itself, you can generate Rust doc.
Where is it? I couldn't find it in your repo.
It's in the code. So like the API documentation is like comments on the documented functions and stuff like that.
So for those unfamiliar with Rust, how would you generate that?
Yeah, you're on like cargo Rust doc.
Cargo doc.
Yeah, so we would publish that. It probably needs more examples and stuff like that. But since we know it's a library, we've made some attempt to make sure that the functions are documented, and that'll continue.
Okay. Yeah. I think for, at least for Ursa, one of the things that people have found useful was we have like a whole docs repo. You know,
a separate repository for building the documentation that isn't docs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was just curious about that. Just sort of on the ledger integration stuff, but I don't want to go too deeply into that here. So anyways, thanks. This looks really cool.
Okay. I think Jonathan wanted to say a bit more.
Yeah, so I think in order to keep the nature of the project and the spirit of Transact, I think, I don't know, I don't want to burst into an open door, but maybe we should allocate some time for Transact to do what Transact needs to do. And then at some point, if we really want to integrate with other projects, we will have to set up joint milestones so that if, let's say, Fabric 2.2, I'm just throwing a number here, we'll need to change the ordering service or stuff like that, that we'll look at the read-write set, we'll be able to kind of look at the timeline of Transact, and then if something is mature enough, only then, or maybe closely before that, to change or amend or basically interact with Transact through the development process of each specific project. So maybe to first kind of grow, you know, develop the personality of the project, So the transactor is something a little bit more mature, and only and aligned with that, we can influence a bit in terms of the API, especially the ones that know each specific project. But at some point, we will have to, you know, because if we have like a common library that extends functionality for, let's say, four projects, then we will also need to impose some restrictions at some point later on down the line, right? Because we will rely, we'll depend on each other, right? Imagine us using OpenSSL. So if OpenSSL changes API, we need to change. So we need to think about like a period of developing Transact and then another period of having the cross dependencies in a way. You know, it's not going to be completely clean when two parts are moving apart and just the APIs, because there will be different levels and maturity of the functionalities provided, I believe, right? Transacting 0.9 and Fabric is 2.2, what do we do? You know what I mean? So just something to think in mind, to keep in mind when we are designing and developing it, is that I have to be friendly for others to embrace it.
Okay, those are good thoughts on how we manage dependencies across projects and how groups would want to try to align their release milestones. We should keep those in mind as we mature the projects. Bala and Ben, I saw that you have questions in the doc. Those might be too low level for, it might be better just to respond within the doc on those, I'm not sure, but I wanted to make sure that you're able to ask those or if there's anything higher level.
Hey, Dan, I wanted to follow on to Jonathan's point a little bit, if I could.
Let me just give Ben a second, then we can come back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. For the question that I have there, I think we can take that offline or part of the doc. As I understood more reading down the document here, so I think my understanding at the introduction paragraph there was different now, now that I've been able to read more. But I do have a question whether Transact takes into consideration for multi-stage execution, because in Fabric at the time the smart contract execute the transaction, it is a simulation to generate read-write set. It is not the time that the transformation get committed. The commitment of the read-write set would happen later on after the consensus, because the consensus will take into account that read-write set as part of the endorsement policy. So it's actually multi-stage, if you will, execution. So my question is whether that is, if there's any capabilities or feature that allow Fabric to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, so if you look at the process, there's a diagram in the bottom that has like the distributed ledger implementation, second diagram. The distributed ledger is actually in control of like when to apply the state changes, which would presumably be converted to read-write sets for Fabric. And that's a conscious decision we made when kind of refactoring this into the Transact code from the Sawtooth stuff, is to separate that step. Because in Sawtooth, the scheduler actually applies the state change. Our understanding of Fabric is such that we thought that wouldn't work. And so we decoupled that step, and so that you can generate the receipts. And then what you do with the receipts is up to the distributed ledger implementation.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, Bawa, please.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Basically, I think it's a good idea to have some shared library across different projects. The major concern is, we have Ledger have already five frameworks. They have been implemented within different languages, like Fabric is with Go and Sawtooth with Python, and also different protocols. Fabric using the gRPC, and the other projects may using other RPC or REST API. So I think it might be a challenge for the Transact to define these some unique API to be work with different frameworks. There's no details in such details in the proposal. I think we can improve with providing some API and how to handle with different protocols or languages. That will be better.
Yeah.
If I could say something on that one too, I know where you're coming from on that, but I think, and Sean, you know, you can correct, please feel free to correct me where I'm wrong, but I don't think the purpose was actually to, I mean, if you kind of read in the document, right, I think those things would all stand outside, right? I think if you're talking about working on specific entry points, like in and out, they should be actually protocol agnostic, right? I mean, the engine itself has kind of defined inputs of, you know, basically the states and what's coming in a format that's in there. Smart contracts will have, you know, specific to their engine runtimes. So, I mean, a similar analog here would be if for some, like there's like, as an example, technically it would take labor. There's probably no technical reason, as an example, that in Fabric we couldn't have taken, you know, transaction processors, right, and figured out a way to integrate them in. Now, of course, we won't need to do that because we're taking the core, underlying core, you know, slimming that down to a more flexible component. So I don't think we would want to get into things like gRPC and COM and communication protocol here. I think this is just wrapping additional layers around what would have been like how everybody chose to integrate in something like the EVM, for example, right? So I think that all that stuff, all that plumbing is outside and up to the consuming one to get traffic in and out. And then all we do is, you know, pass it into here where appropriate.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think like if we need to do wrappers from Go to Rust, which seems like the most likely, I feel like that's something that we can accomplish and like maintain as part of the project. That if you're calling it library code, we just have a Go API that can be consumed by Fabric, and Sawtooth and Indy are both heavily Rust at this point. So Sawtooth is partially still Python right now, but that's going to go away over time. And so really we only care about Rust. And I think it's Go and Rust are going to be fairly compatible in terms of us making that transition through like an FFI layer.
Okay, thanks. So we're down fairly low, which is, I think, a good sign. Mark did have a follow-up that he wanted on Jonathan's comments on release alignment. And I think that'll be the last comment that we'll have an opportunity to take right now. For members, want to give some indication on Rocket Chat, whether you'd like additional discussion at a later time or whether you're satisfied with the discussion up to this point, please take some time to do that. And go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. So one thing, and this does not go against this proposal at all. In my mind, you know, it's not going to hold it up in my mind, but in general, I think we need to be careful when we start doing libraries in all these different languages, because we will run into dependency hell down the road. If, you know, this goes into Fabric and Fabric's using a version of Go that's based on a certain version of GCC and this is built on another one, you will end up in trouble down the road. So I think we just need to be careful of things like that over time. I've seen that with some of the Ethereum products I've tried to build. So, you know, like I said, I don't want it to influence, you know, I'm not saying we should change this or anything, but I think it's just something we need to be careful of down the road.
Yeah, totally.
One way to address that is to get into a regular, I mean, like the Eclipse community does, right, where they have like a yearly release where they do a major point release and then kind of a regular kind of heartbeat of minor point releases, kind of adopting a quarterly release cycle here that maybe we try to sync some of the projects.
To be honest, Brian,
but let's be kind of finding about that. I don't know that. Yeah,
we have a long-term support when we don't change APIs, and then we have like, you know, like the 2.0 will break some APIs. We announce and tell everybody.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say everyone had to follow Fabric. I was just saying that, yes, Fabric has that. And
No, I mean a long-term release cycle in general with a short-term, like with a short milestones. Not to follow Fabric, but just to follow the process maybe. We already have one in place.
Okay, I think that's probably a good note to conclude on. We were missing a few people from the call. I suppose I should chime in for those who haven't looked at Silas did send a note to the mail list in support there. I think probably what we'll do is go to the mail list after this, but I want to allocate enough time for taking a look at the next proposal. So if you further comments on this, feel free to hit the chat or the mail list, and then we might take up a vote there if it seems like everybody is ready to go with that on the mail list. And we will now abruptly change over to a proposal from Nathan that was posted onto the agenda yesterday, I think. So hopefully some people have had a chance to look at it. I personally haven't had an opportunity. So Nathan, if you want to maybe give us a bit of an introduction, and we can go from there in our remaining 15 minutes.
Absolutely. First, I'd like to welcome a bunch of the maintainers on the project who've been working for quite some time inside of the Indie Agent working group. We have John Jordan, Stephen Curran, and Sam Curran on the call, along with a few others. So hopefully they'll be able to help with some of the questions you might have as well. We have been working on Indie for quite some time, and there's, as you might know, there's two different types of interactions that occur within the Indie platform right now. The first interaction is the one that most of us are very familiar with in blockchain platforms, where when you want to set up a network, you want a trusted oracle for some information that's shared amongst multiple parties. So you set up a bunch of nodes, and then you start doing transactions and storing state. In digital identity, that's the interaction that's probably the lesser of the two in terms of what it is you're trying to do to accomplish your use case. At the W3C, we call the part that goes on the ledger a verifiable data registry. And what Indie's main focus is to provide a blockchain that has the right qualities to accomplish that trusted oracle that lets one context make cryptographic commitments for interacting with someone who's in a different context. And then they can use verifiable credentials to share the information between them. As we've built out that platform, the portion for the two identity owners making those commitments and then interacting with each other independent of that blockchain has gotten larger and larger. And we find ourselves in a position where that portion of the code base is dominating a lot of the discussions within Indie itself. And we've started to find lots of applicability and use cases for that technology and that code in particular that spans well beyond Indie needs to be usable and used in places that don't need to share concerns with the portion that is Indie itself. An example of this is you might have a blockchain that wants to use decentralized identifiers or DID support in order to share the information on its chain with people who don't know about its Genesis transaction block. Certainly the Indie portion is good for anchoring the credential definitions and the schemas and things to verify and validate that data, but the protocol is required to sign those credentials and share that data across from one party to another party is very different than the code that goes into building the Indie blockchain itself. And that's really the portions that we're talking about when we talk about splitting out agent interaction or wallet interactions from Indie into this new project we're calling Aries. If we scroll down, Rye, to the diagram that's within the project proposal, that's probably the easiest thing to talk to for those who aren't as familiar with this project proposal. we end up with, inside of Indy, a resolver layer that lets you interact with the data model and anchor the right objects to a blockchain. And Indy certainly can continue to host those sorts of resolver implementations for both the Indy blockchain and other blockchains at Hyperledger as we see fit. But more interestingly, we end up with the credentials exchange protocol for doing this trusted information interaction and a resolver interface that lets us interact with the types of transactions that might be on a ledger, whether they be the verifiable data registry set of transactions or whether they be value transfer transactions like transferring Bitcoins or Ether from one party to another. We end up with a portion of the code that interacts with URSA to gain its crypto functionality and then does secrets management and interaction between more than one instance of the software to be able to back up and recover those secrets and to be able to share information in a trusted way between between parties. There's a lot of notes in the project proposal about how we think the interaction with Indy and between Indy and Aries work going forward, and also how that interaction between Aries and URSA happens to build a reusable framework that we can use kind of as an edge client toolkit to build a client that could interact with a Fabric blockchain or interact with a Sawtooth blockchain or interact with Indy or interact with other systems that do verifiable credentials information exchange. So I think with that introduction, obviously the project proposal I think is about 9 pages long when we had it in Google Docs. So there's quite a bit of content there. I think the best thing to do is probably to take questions and go from there.
So Nathan, I think one opportunity with this project is to bring in other parts of the, let's call it the identity community that aren't necessarily engaged with Hyperledger. Can you comment on the advantages that you see in this project for the ability to do that, and maybe also how URSA may or may not encourage their participation?
Absolutely. We've seen a lot of interest in URSA from the blockchain side of the community. The verifiable credentials community is just working on wrapping up the data model specification for verifiable credentials exchange. And a lot of that spec is not currently in scope inside of Indy because Indy has a particular opinion about how that interaction occurs. Separating Aries out into its own project allows us to expand the scope of what we support to encompass a broader set of what's going on in the standards body. You know, we expect code contributions for resolvers for some of the other ledgers that are working at doing decentralized identity. We've had a lot of interest expressed in supporting JWT-style verifiable credentials, which will expand the reach of how the code can be integrated into other platforms around the web. By having Indy be independent of Aries, it lets those contributors know that those pieces of functionality are clearly in scope, and those contributions are more than welcome, and also helps build that compatibility with URSA for URSA to become more widely available to some of the digital identity platforms besides the blockchain server side part of the system.
Okay, great. I think you mentioned separately that you might have some meetings occurring next week where you might be able to draw in some support from some of those other communities.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, next week is the Internet Identity Workshop in Mountain View, California, and we're hoping to have kind of some preliminary approval at least on the project so that we can better socialize that this is a place that they're welcome to collaborate and contribute to help kind of build support for more cross-framework interoperability at a library code level. There's a lot of work going on in the standards organizations to build that sort of compatibility, but not as much practical code being written as we would like. And the Hyperledger community has been the best place we've had to incubate that community. The agent calls regularly have 20 to 30 participants every week. And that is basically the basis for this community for the Hyperledger Aries project. So all the folks you see listed in the sponsors are all already active when their organizations are making contributions either through documentation or obviously leadership in terms of helping gather requirements, especially with VIPN and the work that's been going on in the identity working group. So the hope here is that it allows us to pull more of those folks in to be actually writing code and shipping things that build the basis for applications and tools that sit on top, which is the yellow box here in this diagram.
Great. So if there's others participating in that meeting next week, I'd encourage you to help get some more eyes and interaction on the proposal. Give Nathan a hand with that. I see Brian's hand is up.
Yeah, first, thank you for following the format for the project proposals. That makes it easier to review and have this conversation. And thank you for having a good name. And for those listening who may be encouraged to support one of the proposals today and not the other, I would suggest approving both. That way we avoid having 13 projects in Hyperledger, just for anyone who's numerically superstitious. At least we got past four projects, which is an unlucky number in China pretty quickly. But yeah, I'm really excited about this and would love to see it get started.
Okay, any other clarifying questions in our remaining couple minutes here?
Just to say quickly that I didn't mean that we should all follow Fabric's schedule. Just to try to see if that process works for other projects. Just to make sure that it does not make sense.
Jonathan, I don't think we can all follow Fabric schedule on the way. Okay, I don't see any other immediate questions from anybody out there. So I think we'll go ahead and wind down and please take your questions for the second proposal to the wiki where it's housed or to the mailing list. And then I think we'll look at having more discussion on that next week after people have had an opportunity to dig a little deeper and maybe there's some more feedback from the conference next week. And we will also turn to the mail list for the Transact proposal. Well, Vipin has his hand up there. So Vipin, you get to take us out here.
Yeah. I'm a sponsor on the ARIES project. I was very impressed with the presentation that Nathan gave at Identity Working Group meeting. So if you want a longer discourse on ARIES, there is always the recording to turn to. The second thing is, I think this ARIES proposal is very powerful because it is taking us towards adoption, which is the most important thing.
Okay, great. Well, if you wouldn't mind copying the link to that recording into the chat, that would probably be for convenient for people to access. Thank you, everybody, for your time and engagement in today's call, and we will hear from everybody on the mail list and again next week. Thanks.